Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer, weekdays at noon on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.
We return to Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Brought to you by Digitex. Managed print services to keep your printing costs down?
Yeah, Digitex does that.
Digitex.ca on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Bob Stauffer, Brendan Escott with you. Hope you're having a terrific Thursday. Guests on the show receive gift certificates to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Whether you're celebrating a special moment or simply savoring a night in the town, every meal's an occasion at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. It's the greatest steak you've ever had. 9990 Jasper Avenue, Ruth's Chris, Edmonton, the 99th. Ruth's Chris opened up in North America. As promised, we're going to hook up with a guy we have on the show, but once every 3 weeks to a month. He grew up in these parts, played for the Canadian Athletic Club at one time, willed himself to an NHL career. We're actually going to talk about a couple of the minor pro teams that he played with. Longtime Washington Capitals analyst, Alan May. Al, how you doing?
Doing great, Bob. Great to be back.
Absolutely. Are you in Texas? Are you in Minnesota? Or are you back in D.C.?
I was in D.C. the other day, but I'm back in Texas until pretty much the start of the season, till I guess the first or second last preseason game.
Now, Alberta just got clamped down pretty good, as you're well aware, because I know you follow things here. It does allow private businesses to have an exemption in which they can go ahead, and the Oilers have already delineated sort of their plan of attack into, you know, getting fans involved and back in the games, and fans needing to have a proof of a vaccination or a negative test in the 48 hours before the game is being played. Is there a difference between how things are being handled right now in D.C. or how they were handled in Minnesota during the summer versus Texas?
Well, you know what? Everyone is just, in all three of those places, it's been about respect and doing the right thing. And I think last week when I was in D.C., I saw a lot more masks than I've seen in Texas. But it's, you know, they had a surge there.
Yep.
And they've mandated in D.C. and Maryland that you have to wear masks. And then in Texas, it's been kind of business as usual, and people are getting tested. People are getting COVID. People are taking care of themselves. So, you know, it all depends which news you're listening to. But I think, by and large, in all three of the places that I spend my summer, everyone's been doing what's responsible. And, you know, I haven't really heard of anyone catching the variant. As I told you before, my ex-wife is a CNO of an emergency hospital group. And, you know, it's kind of been the same that it's been the entire time. And they've had people coming in who have had double vaccinations that have COVID again. And they've had every different situation there is, but it doesn't seem like they're severe right now with the cases that they've been encountering.
And whereas right now, as you're aware, Alberta's going through maybe its toughest stretch. I think we had 24 deaths yesterday to increase the province's totals. Alberta's still under, well, they've got to be under 3,000 since the beginning of it 16 months ago. All right, Al, let's. Bill Daly spoke today. He said that the players will be, I think he said, around 98% vaccinated by the time we get started for the regular season. Were you surprised at the fact that there was movement from the NHLPA? I mean, they flat out stated that it's going to be very difficult for unvaccinated players to move around the league. They're going to be considerably more limited than the vaccinated. Are you surprised by this, that this ended up transpiring in terms of the relationship between the NHL and PA and the NHL?
No, I think common sense prevails, is that people have been, you know, they're trying to stay informed, and, you know, it's really hard with the way the news works now. But, you know, the players, they're getting a different set of information from the league, which has been a really good one, because you saw what we did in Canada last summer with the two bubble cities. there wasn't one test positive out of 35,000 tests in that, what, 2.5-3 month period. So I think that's been excellent. And the NHL has been following good advice, and they've been instructing their players, and the players that have stepped away from it and who haven't been as careful as the others, they've paid a little bit of a price. But I think now everyone realizes common sense. You've just got to make sure that you're taking care of yourself and your family. You don't want to be infecting others, and they have a lot of money at stake as well.
Well, that's part of the reason why, to me, it's like you got a short window there to make some cash. Who's a bigger star right now in Washington, Alexander Ovechkin or Lamar Jackson, who, as you know, 2 years ago was the NFL's MVP?
Alexander Ovechkin, and he will continue to be until he's done playing. And he has taken it. There's no one wearing a Lamar Jackson jersey in that and those parts. Everyone wears OB number 8. From every walk of life, every single day that I'm in D.C., I see Ovechkin jerseys. I see Ovechkin T-shirts, Capitals T-shirts. And the Capitals have become the team of that region because of, you know, how hard they performed over the years, what they do in the community. And Ovechkin's been at an excellent status from the day he's gotten the league. You know, whether you want to detract from how he plays the game, he's been a superstar in every facet on and off of the ice.
And we should qualify the statement. How far is Baltimore from D.C.?
Well, it's closer than Calgary is to Edmonton. It's about where Leduc is to Edmonton. But really, it's a world away. It's two completely different cities. There's nothing the same about either place. Baltimore's got their football team that's actually been a proud franchise for a long time. Since they came to Baltimore, they've had a good footprint. But the Caps play in a normal year 82 games, one or two rounds in the playoffs, and 1 year they're lucky enough to play four and get the 16 wins to win the Stanley Cup, and that speaks volumes. Anywhere you're at, when you can win a championship, you become the most popular team.
And right now, the Washington football team, formerly named, of course, the Redskins, they are not a suffice to say, they're not an overly popular team in that market. Not like they were back during the Joe Gibbs era. Is that right?
Well, basically, in the last, they've had 30 quarterbacks since 1992. So you take that, there's been inconsistency there. The most consistent thing they are is inconsistent. There's a lot of negative news that comes out of there from the owner on down, nonstop.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not a franchise you can be very proud of, you know, at all times, because there's always chaos and dysfunction. And it looks like they were going in the right direction, and they've got an incredible leader in Ron Rivera, who does some great things with his players and his teams. And he looks like he's running the entire operation now. So I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, he used to be involved with Carolina. Daniel Snyder is the owner of the Washington football team. We are joined right now by Al May, who works on the Capitals broadcast but moves all around the United States and grew up here in Edmonton. Hey, just before we talk a little bit more about sort of expectations this year, whether or not we think scoring might go up, Connor McDavid made a couple comments. He just wants to see the game being officiated and not managed. Is that a byproduct? He did an availability before training camps even started, like the captain skates. Did you used to skate at the U of A back in the day in the late late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, I did. I skated with Kevin Primo. I would skate with Audrey Bakewell in the morning, and then I would skate. I started skating with Kevin near the end of my career. Or no, I guess it was like 25 to 30 years old. And with that great group of players that was out there all the time, and it was spectacular, actually, to be able to be out there with the guys over there.
So McDavid had a captain skate the other day, did an availability, and spoke, Al, about, he was asked about officiating because he didn't draw a penalty call in the series against Winnipeg. Edmonton lost 4-1 goal games, 3 in overtime against the Jets. Hey, the Jets won the series. You know, Connor Hellebuyck had a .950 save percentage. You and me have privately discussed this on numerous. It's a huge frustration for me in the fact that, you know, he doesn't. How does that guy not get a single playoff, draw a single power play in the playoffs? It befuddles me. The fact that McDavid spoke about it before the season really even got started, is that a sign that maybe he's getting more comfortable and maybe he's trying to sort of politely. Not challenge the officials, but at least make them aware. You know what I'm saying?
Well, watch him get 5 minor penalties the very first game. So there'll be some blowback from that, but I think it's great leadership on his part for the entire league. There's so many former players, past and the current players that want that, the coaches. You know, I don't want the managed game, just like I don't want an umpire who doesn't give you a strike when it's supposed to be a strike in baseball. There's way too much leeway in baseball with how some of these guys have personal vendettas against teams in my eyes. And I honestly believe that I want the game called the way it's supposed to be played. It needs to be more consistent. And it's the number one thing that's complained about season after season. Then the Department of Player Safety is number two. But I think they've got to rein these two things in and have way more consistency. And there's no way that there shouldn't have been penalty calls in the favor of the Oilers in the playoffs on Connor McDavid, because he is a human highlight machine. The only way to stop him is pretty much to cheat. Very few players in the league can skate like him, and I don't think there's one player in the league that can skate backwards and keep up with him when he's going forwards.
All right. I wanted to talk a little about your minors days. You started off playing in the old Atlantic Coast League. Former Alberta Golden Bear Doug McCarthy was the leading scorer on your team. And very briefly that year, you guys also had a guy by the name of Brian Wells, who, Al, you would have played against in the WHL. He was a nasty, like a 5'8", 5'9". I remember he got involved in that stick-swinging incident with Martin Doherty. What do you remember about the Atlantic Coast Hockey League, and how wild was it back in the day?
Well, I played with Brian Wells in junior as well. And I actually got him to come down there after he got kicked out of junior. And it didn't take him too long to get himself in trouble there. He just couldn't control himself. And talk about a guy that screwed up, because he was a legitimate NHL player if he would have been able to control himself, but he was just way too out of control. And he said, he goes, you're on fire all the time. He goes, I kind of explode. And I just couldn't see, because I was always envious of how well he skated. He's not quite as great as Theo, but he was a great skater. Fabulous physique, tough as they come, wouldn't let himself be injured. And he just couldn't control himself. But the way the league was played back then, you know, a coach basically just said who was going out. And this you'll love, and anyone that plays hockey would love this. The roster was 9-4-2. And believe me, the third line, those guys didn't get any ice time. So my line would roll. We'd go out with Dougie, and we'd go out. Second line would go. We'd go again. The second line would go again. We might stay out for a double shift, and then maybe the third line would go out. And then you'd kill penalties as a defenseman. You'd kill penalties as a forward. But there was no such thing as real defense. You back check. You took the wide guy in the back check. But really, it was all about forechecking, mayhem, crashing in the goalies. And the referees were, I guess they were consistent, and they really didn't call anything until they had to. And those were fighting majors, and I believe I had 52 fights in that league in 42 games, if that's what I played, something like that. But we didn't get paid a lot, but I'll tell you what, the guys loved it. I think I might have had the most fun that I had in all my hockey career was playing down there in those packed arenas. They loved physical play. They cheered. They didn't sit on their hands. And it was just a fabulous time in my life.
How much of a step up was it the next season to play with Boston's farm team in Maine and then eventually on to the Oilers in Nova Scotia?
Well, you know, the biggest thing for me was I was always, I worked out like crazy. I worked out hours a day. And then down in that league, my fitness levels and the practices that we had actually were very unique. We did a lot of anaerobic sprint drills throughout the practice. And your cardio and the amount of ice time you got, you know, so we were playing as top guys. We're playing 30 to 40 minutes every game. Full bore. There was no pacing yourself. It was awesome. And when I got up to the American League at the end of the year, I remember I had a bag skate after the second game. I was playing for the Springfield Indians. And, you know, how I got there was a whole stroke of luck, and it was phenomenal. You know, I ended up getting me 3 contract offers out of 4 games. But I was out skating everyone because of the fitness levels that we had. And then I carried that into Boston the next year. But the biggest thing when I signed at Boston, especially, was Mike Milbury was head and shoulders above every coach I'd ever had. As far as positional play, every faceoff had a set play or set circumstances. And there was a lot more learning. And I learned more in that season than I learned in my entire career. And then, you know, there was just structure. And, you know, what I thought was fun, I had to learn, you know, that you couldn't have the fun anymore. You had to back check and you had to, you know, hook and hold, like, you know, your life depended on it when you're playing defense. But on offense, it wasn't as wild, and, you know, there was more structure to it. So the biggest thing was learning how to play with structure.
See, you put up some, you know, relatively speaking, some offensive numbers along the way, right? Like, you scored 18 goals in 79 American Hockey League games in 87-88, and you had 411 penalty minutes. The next season, you're with Cape Breton, and you got a little bit of a look-see with the Oilers as well in 88-89. And just for the listeners out there that are younger, because many of them have not heard of these two guys, but if you could maybe speak to a couple guys, David Haas and Mike Ware, different players, but guys that had over 300 penalty minutes on a team where you didn't have to do all the fighting, did you?
No, you know, one of the things about that league is that we played, so in the Maritimes, it was Cape Breton's first year. They moved from Halifax. Quebec moved from Fredericton to Halifax. And the Jets moved into Moncton. So the three teams, we played two times each in preseason. It was kind of a round robin. So we played four preseason games. And then they played 16 times.
Oh, man.
Each of those teams in the playoffs. So a lot of your penalty minutes were, I basically fought every player in the Quebec Nordiques or the Halifax Nordiques, whatever, the Citadel, I think they were called back then. And it was, those games were just, you just wait for it to happen, and that would happen. That was back in the day. They weren't throwing out tens in games like they do now. So there was a lot of five-minute skirmishes involved, and, you know, five guys fighting, every guy gets a five-minute penalty. They never called it the way they're supposed to. But, you know, where is he? It was awesome watching him, and that Haas was trying to make a name for himself, and they would step up. So it was a lot different than being the solo guy most of the time. But it was fun, and I had a lot of respect, especially for Mike Ware, because, what was he, 6'5", 6'6", about 200 pounds. He had the longest neck of any hockey player I'd ever seen, and he'd go toe-to-toe with the best of them, with the guys who are obviously taking something to make their muscles a lot bigger. But just an incredible teammate. And then David Haas was kind of a frustrating guy because he just couldn't put it together. But I think there was too much pressure on those old first-rounders to produce right away and not learn the game properly.
You mentioned the fact, how many guys were using hamburger helper back in the day?
Well, I swear, some of the teams we were playing against, it seemed like the whole team was. And you know that I was 165, 170 pounds at best back then. And you just look at some of these guys, they couldn't move. And they were ginormous. They looked like they were 300 pounds, and that was before we had all this RoboCop Kevlar hockey equipment. And they were massive. And you know, they weren't very good. They weren't, you know. And I always looked at it as a sign that they were terrified to play the game the other way. Honestly, so it, you know, you just we waded through all of those guys and got our pounds of flesh, and you know, us guys made it that were legit. So it was a lot different of a time, and the games were way more combustible than they are now, certainly.
We're joined by Alan May, who played a grand total of 393 games in the NHL, a better part of five seasons with the Washington Capitals, and that's kind of where you established yourself a bit. I want to ask you about a guy that many of our listeners know the story, and it's kind of sad, but you were briefly a teammate of John Kordick's. You would have seen him probably in town here in the offseason. And I can tell you that, like, from a in terms of, and he did not throw bombs, but he had he could really chuck left-handed. Any thoughts on John, who unfortunately passed away in the early 1990s?
Well, I absolutely loved the guy. He was one of the funniest guys that I've ever known. And we didn't, you know, I would see him. We didn't hang out with the same group of guys in the summer. We always skated together. And I remember when we all played in the midget league that he was, I believe he led the league in scoring for defense when he was a rushing defense, when he went to Portland and completely changed his game and his persona of who he was as a person. And, you know, he played in a very tough time in the National Hockey League. And I think he got the best of him, and among other things. And then you look at all the other things that went on with John, but, it's funny that I think he only played about seven games he was there. You know, he started, you know, his habits and the things that were getting in the way came to the forefront, and the team helped him get, you know, they forced him in to get help, and which was, you know, it was, you know, necessary. But I think it's seven of the most talked about games ever that he and I played together. And I'm not sure where the penalty minute records are and all of that, but people still talk about it to this day. I was at a golf tournament in D.C. on Monday, and people were talking about the two of us playing on the same line for a little while, and it was absolutely hilarious, all the things that went on. I could talk for hours just about that stint that he had there. But I love him. He was a funny guy. He was a good teammate, but that poor guy just had so many demons.
Yeah, absolutely. 101 penalty minutes in seven games for Washington that season. Like, Al, 101 minutes in seven, that's hard to do.
I don't think we ever played one of those games without both of us getting in the fight at the same time. And it was always something. And, you know, some of the stories I can tell you off the air, some I can tell you on the air, but just what an absolute beauty. And I think he knew every off-color joke there was that it was ever, you know, that was ever known at that time. So he kept us in stitches. And, you know, when he was on, he was on. And when he was moody, it was tough.
Are you ever?
Go ahead.
Sorry for interrupting. I was going to ask you today, do you still do some games down by the bench?
You know what? I'm not sure what's going to happen because last year I couldn't do it, but I was doing 30 games a season down there.
Okay.
And now, yeah, I don't know where we're at with the status of everything right now. As I told you last time I was on here, hockey season doesn't start there until about a week before the season goes. You know, no one could really care right now, but once they get it going, it'll take right off.
I guess we're all here. You know where I'm going to go next. I mean, you mentioned the fact that John, you know, knew the jokes, but how dramatically has the verbiage changed on the ice over the last several years? Because
you can't say anything anymore, can you? I haven't heard anything like I used to hear. Tom Wilson's really, really good at it, but he stays within the PC bounds of everything. And believe me, there were things said back then that are five different suspensions now. So it's a different world, and guys are they're all more mindful. Just everything's evolved, and everything is better. But it's not as funny as it used to be. And I don't think you're allowed to tell people you're going to kill them anymore. But that used to happen 10 times a game back then.
Yeah. Who is the funniest guy? And you had some healthy rivalries with all, you know, the Philadelphias and the Pittsburghs and teams like that. You know, the New York teams. But who made you chuckle the most? Who could just get a barb in or a shot in and really drill a guy, and even have guys on that player's own team laughing?
Well, you know what's funny is I used to have a really good thing going to Ty Domi all the time. It was nonstop. And I'd get him. I'd stop him in his tracks with some of the things I say. I might see him out after having a beer, and he'd just shake his head. He goes, "You got me." He goes, I had no comeback. But you look at, there were other guys, too. You know what? Brian Noonan was a guy that used to say things. And, you know, Scott Mellenby was pretty funny out there. Craig Berube, I think, only knew one word. You know, there were just different things going on, and you know, but the biggest thing is whatever Dave Brown said was scary. So you know, I always look back at that. But there, and then Dino Cicerelli as a teammate, you know, because he was always in like some off ice trouble, and guys would give it to him, but he always had a better comeback than they sent at him. So it was a different world. You know, I didn't play against Matthew Barnaby enough, but you could hear him. You just couldn't understand what he was saying all the time. And then, of course, there's Esa Tikkanen. He spoke Tikkanese, and no one, including himself, knew what he was saying. So he is probably one of the all-time best, but no one, if they could ever decipher what he said, it would probably go down in history as the all-time greatest chirps ever.
So if Dave Brown said, "I'm going to kill you,"
you actually believed it. You actually believed it. And then, you know, you make sure you got your adrenaline going in case when it came time to drop the gloves, you were ready. But he was probably, when I played, I'd say he was the most terrifying guy. I wasn't scared of Ty Domi, but I was always very aware of where Dave Brown was and what type of mood he was in. Because, in my opinion, when I was playing for that time, he was the scariest player in the National Hockey League.
Yeah. Al, thank you for sharing some stories with us, okay? We'll touch base in a few weeks.
All right, take care. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That is Alan May, longtime NHLer, and he's worked on the Capitals broadcast for the last several years. Bob Stauffer and Brendan Escott with you. 12:56 at Edmonton. We'll take a two-minute timeout. Come right back on Oilers Now.
Hi, this is Mike Smith from your Edmonton Oilers, and you're listening to Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer on 630 CHED.
12:57 in Edmonton. The Edmonton Oilers last year tied for 7th in team save percentage in the National Hockey League. You can text us at any time on the Ashley Fine Floors text line at 780-496-0063. The voice from the past, the Chiseler out of Las Vegas, says, "Bob, I won't be pragmatic or myopic in any form. It's completely clear I don't have command throughout this text. Today's show, minus the chaos and the dysfunction, it's been a real highlight of weeks, Bob. Lineups. We previously discussed this before. Alan May for mayor, a real testament to authenticity, a real beauty, a funny guy. Love it. Bob, is it true, rumor has it, you fought and outskated everybody back in the day with the Strathcona Warriors? and the Chisler ads. I did skate with Kordick during a couple summers. Well, you were a goalie, Chisler. They were firing pucks on you, that's why. Did I outfight and outskate everybody back in the day with the Strathcona Warriors? Probably not. We had a couple guys that were better. Brad Moline, Arnold Cullum were both better, and St. Albert had like 8 guys that were better. They used to destroy us every game. Brendan, when you were growing up playing hockey in Kamloops, who used to crush you?
Nobody that ever made it anywhere, that's for certain. Kelowna, guys in Kelowna would crush me.
Yeah, but like, who had the best team? Because when I was, you know, I'm a 66, so when I was growing up, St. Albert had they had Viveros, and they had Todd Ewan and Carnelli, and Hoggett came up and played some, like, they used to just smoke us. So, like, we were lucky to get get 3 goals in a game. It was, I think we had the puck about 18% of the time. So did you have a team like, was Kelowna that team that just used to take the boys from Kamloops to the woodshed?
Yeah, that was certainly the bar. You know, they, for whatever reason, I guess a bigger market, just by enough that they always seemed to have the edge talent-wise. And that was, you know, if you were meeting them in the first round of the playoffs, you were meeting them somewhere toward the end.
All right. Off to a Global News Weather Traffic Update with Eileen Bell. Back with Scott Housen, the president and CEO of the American Hockey League.
Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Weekdays at noon on Oilers Radio, 630 Chad.